So this morning we're talking about hope, but we can't talk about hope unless we begin by understanding some of the times that we put our hope in things that don't work out, our hope in things that weren't real. So have you ever put your hope in an exciting business opportunity? If you have, maybe you've had it turn out a little bit like this. Here we go. All right. So maybe that clip wasn't funny to you. It was somewhat funny to me because unfortunately I've had to be that guy to come up and draw the pyramid around the scheme. But as pastors, and again, if I don't think anyone in this room has ever invited me to join a pyramid scheme or network marketing, but as pastors, one of the things that happens a lot is that you will get people to come up to you and say, "Pastor, I know that pastors don't make a lot of money. We have an exciting business opportunity, and whether it's Amway or, you know, anything else from here to there, as pastors, we've probably seen them all and been invited into many of the presentations." But it's hard because you see people get really, really hopeful. And many of those programs often kind of prey on people whose finances are already struggling. If they weren't struggling, they wouldn't have jumped possibly for it in the first place. And I've watched as families that I've cared about and known have put thousands of dollars they didn't have into cleaning products that they couldn't sell, into vitamins, into health shakes, you name it. And you watch as this hopefulness that this will be the solution, this will get me out of debt, this will help me to be my own boss, help me to have financial freedom, quickly erodes as they realize they have to make payment after payment on the thousands of dollars they spent on the things they can't sell. And it's hard because as pastor, none of us want to just burst somebody's bubble. None of us want to pull the hope out from underneath us. But as you've often heard me say, and will say even more through this message, hope deferred makes the heart sick. See, many of us over the years, and I almost went around the table like I had, but I feel like it's almost too personal and too painful. We've all been in periods of darkness where we were hoping in something that let us down. It might have been a relationship. I have teenage girls, so I hear about teenage drama. But you get excited about this person might be my future. They might be the love of my life. And then it just collapses and hope deferred makes the heart sick. Could be that job that you thought was going to work out that became a horribly toxic workplace. Other times life just lets us down when somebody gets sick and then that sickness turns into a prolonged hospitalization, and that hospitalization turns into a funeral. And if you have an experience, you know someone who has. That little lump turned into cancer. Things get dark. And as we talked about before, one of the themes of the transformation that the Holy Spirit brings into our life was not why do bad things happen? It was that in this world we live in, this fallen, broken world, and the scriptures give an explanation of why. It was made good, but it became the place that we have today, full of illness and injury and pain and suffering. This perfect place isn't so perfect anymore. That we all will experience things to be afraid of. There's lots of reasons to have anxiety. There's lots of darkness out there. But in the season of Advent, the word Advent, it means waiting. It's this idea of expectation of good things that are happening. And when we participate in the season of Advent, we get to join with our ancient Near Eastern brothers and sisters that were waiting on the Messiah. But we also get to join together as we await for Christ to come back again. And I remember as a kid, when I saw the first time in scriptures, or as I guess a young adult, I was in Bible college, but many of you would say I was a kid back then. And we were encouraged by a professor that we needed to pray for the second coming of Jesus. And I had so much life ahead of me and so much to be excited for. I was like, I don't think I want Jesus to come back tomorrow. That was a hard thing for me to pray for because the world had nothing but opportunity and excitement. And then I've experienced some hard things in life. I'm like, okay, Jesus, it's time to come back. Maybe tomorrow. I'd be okay with that. But during this season, there's expectation. Just as we wait for gifts under the Christmas tree, for family gatherings, for feasts and meals together, that same emotion and excitement and building we are called to have. As not only we wait for Christ to show up in our lives, which He does through the Holy Spirit every day if we let Him, but to be excited and wait for Jesus to come back into this world and make right everything that's been broken. So all of us have been disappointed, but we can find great comfort in knowing that hope does have a name, and His name is Jesus. During the season of Advent, we recenter our hope in Jesus' incarnation, which is a fancy word for putting on flesh and coming here. Jesus came to us. We didn't have to come to Him. On His resurrection, He died on the cross, which was significant and important, but the big day around Easter isn't Good Friday. That's the day He took our sins. But He would have been just another sacrifice if it wasn't for the resurrection. It was the power of God that rose Him from the dead that made Jesus so different and so special. And again, as Christians, if I were to ask you, list the priorities of things that we should be thinking about and praying for, many Christians, especially younger Christians, wouldn't even list the second coming as a thing. Seems so far out there. But we recenter ourselves and we recenter our hope. Because again, hope deferred makes the heart sick. We recenter it on Jesus, the one thing, the one person, the God who will never let us down. So I want to begin by looking at the darkness that we face. Again, this world is filled with darkness. And in this passage, we're looking at Isaiah chapter 9. And I'll probably read through the whole thing here towards the beginning. But Israel's darkness, and that is the despair of exile and oppression, parallels our own moments of darkness and hopelessness. So we'll turn to Isaiah chapter 9. Nevertheless, there will be no more gloom for those who were in distress. In the past, He humbled the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali. But in the future, He will honor Galilee of the nations by the way of the sea beyond the Jordan. The people walking in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of deep darkness, a light has dawned. You have enlarged the nation and increased their joy. They rejoice before You as people rejoice at the harvest, as warriors rejoice when dividing the plunder. For as in the day of Midian's defeat, You have shattered the yoke that burdens them, the bar across their shoulders, the rod of their oppressors. Every warrior's boot used in battle and every garment rolled in blood will be destined for burning, will be fuel for the fire. So the picture here, and I'm not going to go in depth because I could preach a sermon series on the context to which Isaiah is immediately talking. But Israel is in exile, and that means that Israel has been ripped away from their homeland, and they are in another place. There's two kingdoms. One of them is already in exile, and one of them is about to be in exile. Things are not looking good. The enemy is at the doorstep. War is raging. If you are in Israel, you have lost loved ones to battle. So when they're talking about boots and garments that are rolled in blood, that picture is very clear to the Israelites at this point. Again, part of the nation has already been taken away, and part of it remains as the kingdom is divided between the northern and the southern. And there is a king, and he is holding out, and he is trying to hold the people faithful, and he is trying to hang on, but everything looks dark and filled with despair. The people are starting to lose faith and starting to lose hope that God really will win the battle for them. And Isaiah comes and he gives a prophecy, and it's a prophecy that we'll see is almost like a range of mountains. There is an immediate fulfillment, and there is another fulfillment, and there is yet another fulfillment. So this prophecy takes on not just one, but three meetings. And again, it's a lot like some of the pictures of the peaks that we'll look at, where there are multiple peaks, and it's hard to tell one mountain from the other because they're all together in this beautiful cascade. But here, in the immediate context that Isaiah is talking about, he says, I have good news. God is going to come through for you, but as a sign of this, there will be a child born. A child born to the family of the king, and he will be a symbol and a sign that God is not done with you, that there is redemption, and he will be great. And that came true, and for the people of Israel, it was a sign of victory. It was a sign that God wasn't through with them. But again, the days of darkness were real. We like to say that we live in a really bad time, and I hear people, and again, if I'm not trying to pick on any one of you, but especially in the business world where I'm at, I know some people that are just terminally connected to the news. I mean, they are, that's what they do. Some of the companies I go into, like, they have monitors with cable news that are on all the time above their desks, which has to be bad for morale. And I hear things like, you don't understand, this is like the worst possible time to live in history. And I have to kind of scoff a little bit. Why? How? We have great advancements. There's a lot of good things. Don't get me wrong. There are hard things too. But have you heard that the world's at war? There's never been a time the world hasn't been at war. And as bad as we think it is, when we look at the war in Ukraine, as we look at the wars in the Middle East, and they're bad, especially if you live there. Especially if you live there. In the days of the exile, there were things happening to the Jewish people that our modern sensibilities just can't wrap their mind around. We talk about genocides and Holocausts, and I'm not defending any of them. They're all horrible. And what made Hitler's in the 20th century so bad may have been the scope and the efficiency of it. But these things have been happening for a long time, especially to the Jewish people. It wasn't new. It was just more efficient. It was just larger in scope with maybe a bigger population. But that's what exile means. When you hear exile, it's the king of the kingdom that took over. He goes through and he looks and he says, who's the best and the brightest? Remember the book of Daniel? They'll take them and they'll say, you're going to now serve me, but we're going to give you a new identity. We're going to strip away your cultural past. We're going to give you new names. And for those that aren't the best and the brightest, we're just not going to feed you. And that problem will take care of itself. It was misery and it was death and it was families ripped apart. And it's under this context that Jesus gives the first promise of Advent, the first promise of the incarnation. In the midst of this darkness, God says, a child will be born to you. Verse 6, for to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the greatness of his government and peace, there will be no end. He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing and upholding it with justice and righteousness for that time and on, that time on and forever. The zeal of the Lord Almighty will accomplish this. How many of you are feeling darkness right now? Are feeling disappointment? Are in need of hope? So this picture was taken, and we're missing a little bit of it. Now, thanks for the iPhone, I guess. It does amazing nighttime pictures. But this was at Bear Lake, and Bear Lake is normally in the summertime a very busy place because it's the place you can take like a quarter mile hike and feel like you did something. So for those who are not hikers, there are some that will do, you know, 12 mile uphill both ways, go over a glacier. I think Jason, you guys might be in that camp where you love the big hikes. I like a moderate hike. But there are those, you know, who don't do that. So in the summertime, Bear Lake will just be filled. You can't park. You've got to take a shuttle. And Landon, my business partner, was with me. That was the last time he had been at Bear Lake, where there were probably like 5,000 people walking around it that day. We were there in the wintertime, not as popular of a destination. There was snow on the ground, and we went there in the afternoon and evening was the only time we really had to be able to check things out. You couldn't go very far up. It was that Many Peaks curve where the road was closed. And there we took some beautiful pictures. We talked to some people. But something was planted in Landon's mind that kind of plagued us the rest of the trip. Landon was convinced. He's like, well, the bears, I'm sure, are in hibernation. And one of the other families there said, oh, no, the bears are very active right now. This is when they get their last meals before they hibernate. So we go to Bear Lake and we park and there's no one there. And we walk out and it is dark. There's no lights. There's no street lights out. It is just dark. And as we get out of the car, you're used to the lights from the vehicle and your eyes haven't adjusted and it is just so dark. We walk out onto the path and there not only is it dark, but there's about 3 inches, 4 inches of snow and there is no one else. And the silence, because of the snow on the trees and the snow on the ground, was, what's the expression? The silence was deafening. It was so quiet that all you could hear was your own heartbeat. Now, I found this to be pretty relaxing, but I can tell Landon's nervous. And we get out, and I asked him, I said, I think we can see enough as the stars came out. I think we could make it around the path. Do you want to do a lap around the lake? And he's like, no, no, we're not doing that. They said, well, why not? And he said, bears. He said, last time I was here, there were so many people and now it's just us. And there are bears that are hungry and are trying to finish their last meal before. I do not want to be the last meal of this bear. I have never seen my friend, and we've been friends since I think the third grade. I have never seen him more distraught or more afraid or more anxious than we were standing there a 4-minute walk to the car. But we're standing there, we're taking pictures, and again, it's silent. And I tried to reassure him. I said, I don't think it's very active at night. I think a bear trying to get ready for hibernation is probably resting and saving his energy for when animals are active in the daylight, but didn't matter. He was afraid. And darkness can do that to us. If you're experiencing darkness right now, it may not even be rational, the fear and the angst and everything that you're feeling. But it's there. And Christ is inviting us to place our hope in him. The promise of light. Come on in. Jesus is the light that breaks the darkness. He is the wonderful counselor, mighty God, everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Again, Isaiah 9:6, for to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. So here's where we get into that mountain range concept a little bit again. The promise of light is given, and it's given to Israel in the context of this baby born to the royal family. But there are things that were not yet fulfilled in that. Sure, it was a wonderful time in history, and it was a moment of promise fulfilled. But the promise here is big. The son given to us will be more than just a normal son. The government will be on his shoulders. And he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, and Prince of Peace. This child of the royal family was not called those things. So we see this is a promise that was pointed to Jesus, because no other child born in the flesh would ever be called Mighty God, Everlasting Father, or Prince of Peace. Those are titles that are given to Jesus. Those are epitaphs attached to Jesus' name. And we see here, just in the same way that this promise in the midst of darkness was given to the people of Israel in that moment, it was also given in a greater fulfillment in a taller mountain peak to the entire nation of Israel from the time of its founding in Abraham all the way to the birth of Jesus. There was this excitement and this waiting in the Messiah that would come, the one who would sit on David's throne forever, the one who would be King of Kings, who would restore the nation of Israel to the glorious of glory days. And that is Jesus. And as we read the Old Testament, we see that there's yet another peak we'll talk about in a few moments that doesn't just look at the story of Jesus that we understand, that maybe gives some mind place for us to be in of people like Judas and the other zealots of the time that had high expectations for Jesus not to die on a cross for the forgiveness of sin, but to overthrow Rome and set up a permanent earthly government, one that none others could rival or match. But in Jesus, great light is brought not just to those in the first century waiting on the Messiah, but that same light, that same excitement, that same hope is available to us today. Something beautiful about the breaking of the dark, and as the dark gives way to light. If you've been in hard times, if you didn't know how you were going to pay the bills, if you didn't know how you were going to make it to the next day, to the next thing, and all of a sudden God brings clarity, what was darkness becomes light. It's tremendously refreshing. Some of the language here. For as in the day of Midian's defeat, you have shattered the yoke that burdens them, the bar across their shoulders, and the rod of their oppressors. This picture to the people of Israel, every boot covered in blood, every garment that has been used in war, it will be set in the fire. And what once was this reminder of the horrible things that you had to do and the horrible things that were done to you is now warmth to which you bring comfort in winter. The yoke for animals, that's that big wooden or metal piece that goes across their shoulders so that they can pull the plow. That yoke has been broken. The rod of the oppressors that was used to beat and motivate has been shattered. Seeing Jesus in his incarnation and his coming and putting on flesh, we are no longer slaves to fear. We are no longer slaves to sin. And if we walk in his ways, if we allow ourselves to be filled with his Spirit, if we focus on his kingdom and his righteousness, God promises that all of these other things will be added to us, that he will take care of us, that he will give us our daily bread, that he will meet our needs, that he will keep our families safe. May not be the safe that we're looking for. God's not going to bubble wrap our kids. But the kind of safe that a missionary feels in the middle of the jungle with creepy crawlies all around, but filled with peace and comfort that they know they're exactly where God has called them to be. That kind of safe. God has crushed. He has crushed the power of the oppressor over us. The enemy no longer has any power over us. You can be afflicted, maybe have a nightmare, but you cannot be possessed if the Spirit of God lives within you. You are not just the enemy's plaything. You are a child of God, no longer just abused and orphaned by the world. That's the promise of light that was given in the first century and even larger to us today. Because that promise extends in a final peak in that last mountain out. And again, had to do a little bit so you could read it over this beautiful picture, but that's many peaks curve. And there is mountain behind mountain behind mountain. These are some big mountains. If you've been to the Smoky Mountains, sometimes it's deceptive when you're on the top and you're looking at the top of peaks, just how high up you are. We're looking at 11,000, 12,000, there's some 13,000 and larger peaks here. These are large peaks, maybe not Everest. But I was struggling to breathe a little bit. Jesus is our living hope. That hope hasn't found completion yet. As we wait for the return of Christ, we live in the hope that he will fulfill his promises completely. Of the greatness of his government and peace, there will be no end, and he will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing and upholding it with justice and righteousness from that time on and forever. And the zeal of the Lord Almighty will accomplish this. This promise is not yet fulfilled in the temporal way that we see it, in the linear timeline that we live in. And again, we have to understand God is not bound by time, which will blow your mind. Like, he's bigger than that. He's outside of time. He gets to look down on time, kind of like a parade route. If you watched the Macy's parade and saw the drone footage overhead, God's seen it all, even though it's unfolding for us. He's just that big. But we have not yet seen the fulfillment of this promise, even in the birth of Jesus. This is what the zealots and Judas were waiting for and didn't understand, that Jesus was yet to do that again later when he comes back, when he returns, as he shares with his disciples, now commissioned to be apostles at the end of the Gospels and in the book of Acts. Jesus tells them, I'm not yet done. It's better for you that I go, because I'm sending the Spirit of God, the Holy Spirit. But when I come back, the greatness of Jesus' government and peace, there will be no end. Wars will stop. Disease will be over. Illness and weakness will be at an end. And he will reign on David's throne over his kingdom, establishing and upholding the purest of justice and righteousness. We're all wired a little bit different. And some of us have this urge and angst for justice, and we see an unjust world and it drives us nuts. And some of us fight for that, and some of us have other priorities, and that's okay because God made us one body with all of these different parts, as long as we respect that in each other. But Jesus is going to bring permanent justice and righteousness from that time on when he returns and forever. And the zeal of the Lord Almighty will accomplish this. God will do it. I know I said when I was a young man, it was hard for me to pray for the second coming because I had so much left. And this idea, okay, I don't just want Christ to return and then I'm going to go to heaven. But the picture that he gives, it's better than that. It's this new heaven and new earth where God makes everything over again. And there's this picture that we get to go back and forth between heaven, this timeless place where we experience God's presence and we worship, and then we come back and we get to do work. But like work before the fall, before it was made hard and fruitless, before it became difficult, we get to do work with the gifts that God has given us, and we get to live in this place with people we love where there's only righteousness and goodness and justice. We get to live in this perfect that we've been longing for. There's no reason not to pray for the return of Jesus. And as Christians, just as the first century and those generations before, they waited and they longed for the coming of the Messiah, we wait and long for that final peak in the mountain. Sometimes it's hard when they all blend together. This feels like one promise, but it's actually three. And we wait for the end of that fulfillment, the final completion of it, when God makes everything right. We experience no more darkness, just God's peace and his power and his justice. Proverbs 13:12, hope deferred makes the heart sick, but a longing fulfilled is a tree of life. Within each of us is a longing, whether we recognize it or not. It's the way we were created. Is a longing for the return of Jesus, is a longing for him to establish his kingdom forever. Hope is not wishful thinking. It's confident expectation rooted in God's promises and his character. God will do what he promised, and it's our job with confidence to wait and expect God to move. How would that change your life today and tomorrow, if you move forward expecting God to move, expecting God to show up, expecting God to provide? I think it would change a lot. Faith isn't made to manipulate us. God didn't tell us that we needed to have faith because he wanted to control us. Faith is what allows us to have courage to live out the expectation of hope. It allows us to have courage to do the hard things when we don't see, but we know that God will show up. So we can't give up hope. And it's not just something we write in Christmas cards in the Christmas season. As God's people, hope is a part of our DNA. It's got to be deep down inside of us. It's got to be the sticky thing that we leave everywhere we go, just like our children in an IHOP or grandchildren. Any of you eaten in an IHOP? Were you sticky just like all over afterwards? Maybe I'm doing it wrong. But we leave it everywhere we go. That little bits and pieces of hope, everything we touch. So it's with that we're going to approach the Father with hope as we take part in communion.